Namaste. Our awareness, vast as infinite space, is already accomplished with nothing to be sought or attained. There is absolutely no effort required and nothing that need be done to realize what we are. Any time we spend thinking that there is something that we need to do and that there's someone to do it will lead us more and more away from what we're looking for. Because what we're looking for has no looker or anything looked at. So you see, when we have as the starting point someone who needs to be corrected, fixed, transformed, refined, nullified, brought its passions and senses under control, if we take that personal identity to be an agent of all those factors, then immediately we have a teaching of duality. Even if it's called a teaching of non-duality, it is a teaching of duality. So first of all, we have to use elementary discernment to get really clear on what we are. And this is urgent. This is an urgent matter. It's also very amusing. You know, it's urgent in that, you know, we all feel the tension in the world. We all feel that we may be the last generations of humankind. Who knows? This is very likely. This is very possible. At no time has it been more possible than right now. So in that sense, it's urgent. It's amusing and a cause for great laughter because all along we've taken ourselves to be certain things that we are not. So the non-dual perspective states that there are not two. There is not a personal identity looking for something called enlightenment. There's only awareness, vast as infinite space, already existing as what is naturally present and beneficial in nature. It's as simple as that. And there's no way we can think, philosophize, or practice our way into that. If it could be thought into, philosophized into, and practiced into, then millions of people who have been doing those things would know who they are. Is that the case? No, it's not the case. It's not the case. And again, that is urgent and it's amusing. It's urgent in that let's do something about it. It's amusing in that why would we do all these things that never led to the result or led to the result for so few people? So, you know, we have to look at ourselves as we are. And to do that, it comes down to each of us as who we are. Because we cannot think our way into it, philosophize our way into who we are, or practice our way into who we are, what can we do? All we can do is rest. Rest naturally is the underlying ground of being, the essence of being without seeking anything. And what does that mean? Well, see this little Buddha sitting inside here? And when I shake this thing up, we'll say the Buddha's sitting inside there, totally free inside awakened awareness. And the awakened awareness, you see, it's the pure view. Let's just call it the pure viewer vantage. It's the balanced view that can see everything and all. It's the all-creating monarch, the all-encompassing totality. Well, when we have that going on, and all of the points of view included within the pure view, they're just the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. They're inseparable from awareness, like the luster of gold is inseparable from gold. But if we stir up all these points of view and they're swirling around in there and all the focus is on all the points of view as being something in and of themselves, then we're never going to see the Buddha in there. You know, we're never going to find the Buddha. But what we don't even have to sit still. This Buddha could be running around, it could be making love, it could be standing on its head, it could be walking, talking, studying, working. It doesn't matter what it's doing, it's still a Buddha. You know, the non-dual perspective is that everything is as it is, with nothing left out. Everything is an expanse of equalness and evenness, and that means everything is equal. So no matter what these points of view are, you see, when we just rest naturally in such a way, the points of view, they just naturally settle down, and we see everything as it is. We see everything as an expanse of equalness and evenness. But if we don't rest naturally, we just build more and more points of view and take them to be our reality. And as we build all these belief systems and assumptions of points of view, we categorize them. Some points of view are positive, some points of view are negative, and some points of view are neutral. And then we put all this within a context of time and space. We say we live in time and space. That's also a point of view. Time and a reality of time and space is not the non-dual perspective. It's a dualistic perspective. The non-dual perspective includes time and space, but in essence it is timeless. So this is very, you know, these things are very important for us to know about ourselves in order to discern clearly who we are. When we rest naturally, all the points of view settle down. Say we're in a pond and it has a whole bunch of sediment in it that's all stirred up. If we keep jumping around and stirring it with a stick, the sediment will never settle down. But if we just stand there and do nothing, all the sediment settles. So the principle of natural rest, the yoga of natural rest, which is very, very ancient, is to rest naturally without seeking anything. To rest naturally without seeking anything as all these points of view arise as the dynamic energy of awareness. And the more we rest naturally without seeking anything, without describing anything, resting naturally, resting totally freely and completely, the more we realize ourselves to be this underlying essence or ground of being of every point of view. And the less we take ourselves to be the points of view themselves. So, you know, the points of view are inseparable from awareness. But if we only see the point of view as its description, its definition, its dictionary definition or label, then our whole world will be made up of words. Our whole world will be made up of concepts. Our whole life will be made up of concepts. Our whole life will be made up of descriptions of everything. But once we know that every single one of those points of view, no matter what they are, every single point of view has as its heart essence awakened awareness. If we don't know that about the point of view, then we don't know the point of view completely. We only know it partially, and there are then two. There's awakened awareness over here, and then all the points of view that have to be corrected over here. But all these points of view, no matter what they are, or no matter what we've taken them to be, or no matter how we've categorized them, positive, negative, neutral, spiritual, non-spiritual, they are all equal. This is the primary tenet and principle of the non-dual perspective. So, you know, the non-dual perspective, it has no form. It cannot be limited or restricted to any kind of form whatsoever. If we wanted to put it in any kind of category or form, its most essential form would be humanness itself, without any category or description for what enlightenment is. Just the ultimate reality of being human. It's as simple as that. And we as humankind must come to terms with that for ourselves. It can only come about through each of us resting naturally as whatever points of view we have. The reality of awakened awareness, of the full power of enlightened intent, that is the power and force of everyone in this room and all 7 billion people altogether, is that with your own points of view, no matter what they are, there is awakening that is timelessly occurring naturally occurring and naturally present. And what that means is that there is no awakening, enlightenment, or liberation that's separate or apart from any point of view. So any point of view that you may take yourself to be at any time, whether it's anger, desire, love, joy, whatever it is, rest naturally and just rest as the all-inclusive awakened awareness that is the great reality of that point of view, that is the basic space of that point of view. See, point of view doesn't have a boundary. It doesn't have a perimeter like this. All points of view are pure space, the basic space of awareness and nothing else. A point of view has never been a point of view. Awareness finds its resolution in point of view, and point of view finds its resolution in awareness. How could that ever be described? How could that ever be described? We can't really say anything about it. We can say it's basic space, but if we just said that, we'd be limiting it to something. When we say it's basic space that's naturally present, then we have more of an understanding and a direct experience of what we are. And if we say pure space, naturally present and entirely responsive is the beneficial nature of enlightened intent, then we have a full vantage of what we are. Because we're not a state. You know, if we try to put ourselves into a state, all we do is put ourselves into a point of view. And it may be not the conventional point of view, but it's still a point of view. So if we attempt to fix a certain state, like a non-conceptual state, no thought, no self, nothingness, the void, emptiness, even bliss, clarity, impartiality, neutrality, fatalism, any of these things, or one of the popular expressions of a state is that there's only consciousness and everything happens spontaneously in consciousness. Everything is predestined. You can't do anything about it. If you're supposed to be enlightened, you will be, and if you're not supposed to be enlightened, you won't. And when you are enlightened, you can do whatever you want to do because it doesn't matter. So, you see, now these things, by the way, are not awakening. These are not awakening. They're an anomaly of point of view. They're all within the purview of point of view. They may not be the conventional point of view, but they're still points of view. And when we rest naturally, just as the heart essence of every single one of these labels that arises, we realize that no matter what their description, they are a pristine reality of pure space in which nothing need be done, in which no effort need be made. Pure space has never been tied up in knots. The infinite expanse of pure space has never been tied up in knots. If we took all of pure space and then we configured the letters of the alphabet out of that pure space and then form those alphabetic letters made of pure space into all kinds of words, meanings, treatises, texts, all the books ever written in the world and all the information on the internet, all the letters would still be pure space. So this is what I'm pointing to, that all points of view, no matter what they are, they're like a mirage. They're like the sound in an echo. They're like a dream image occurring in sleep. Each one, no matter how they appear, no matter how magnificent or magical their expression, they are the vastness of pure space and nothing else. The vastness of pure space that is naturally present, entirely lucid and completely beneficial in nature. So how can all these points of view be entirely beneficial in nature? All points of view, no matter what they are entirely beneficial in nature because each point of view, no matter what it is a perfect enlightenment teaching. No matter what the point of view is, it's a perfect enlightenment teaching. Each point of view, because it only is all-inclusive awakened awareness, has as its only intent enlightenment. The enlightenment that already is, the enlightenment that is already accomplished, the enlightenment in which nothing need be done, the enlightenment in which there's no effort to make. So, you know, it doesn't matter what our points of view are. We don't have to change anything in our lives to rest naturally, to be as we are, this natural yoga of rest. We don't have to change a single thing in our lives. So if we have a spiritual practice, we don't need to change that. Nothing needs to change. If we practice celibacy, we don't need to change that. If we're sexually active, we don't need to change that. Nothing needs to change. Wherever we are and whoever we are, enlightenment is already accomplished. This is very, very important to know. There's nothing to change, and not only that, there's no one to change it. As long as we think there is an agent, an inner agent, who can change something, then, again, we have a teaching of duality, not a teaching of non-duality. So in the beginning of natural rest, we rest naturally for short moments, repeated many times, in a totally uncontrived way. So we don't sit for hours trying to get into a natural state of rest. If we're meditating, if we're sitting for hours, then we rest naturally as all the points of view that arise. And when I say rest naturally, we just remain as we are, as the vivid wakefulness that sees through every point of view as itself. We rest naturally as that vivid wakefulness, that vivid awareness in which there is no separation from the dynamic energy called point of view. And as we do so, that vivid wakefulness becomes primary rather than something invisible to us. It becomes primary. And then we quickly see that all the points of view and the interval between, that they all arise. They all appear to arise, abide, or dwell and disappear in this space. But the more we rest naturally, the more we realize that all these points of view really are inseparable from basic space, from aware basic space, and that even the point of view of there being a personal identity, an I, or an agent who's doing something like resting naturally, that too just resolves in basic space with nothing needing to be done about it. So the personal identity doesn't need to be thrashed or practiced or beaten to death or annihilated or expunged out of existence or anything else. The personal identity never was. So as long as we're working on a personal identity or agent, we're working on an illusion. We're working on an illusion. But, you know, we can't figure that out. Figure it out is not a mantra, by the way. That's not a mantra. Figure it out. A mantra is that which soothes the mind. Has figuring it out ever soothed the mind? No, it hasn't. So, you know, the ultimate mantra, the ultimate meditation, the ultimate yoga is that of natural rest, where we just rest naturally without seeking anything, realizing that what we are is already accomplished. If the doubt comes up, oh, you know, I'm not recognizing awareness, or I don't think I can ever be enlightened, or I hope that I'll be enlightened and I fear that I won't. No matter what these points of view are that come up, rest as the vivid wakefulness that is the true nature of every single point of view. That you see, awareness is omniscient and timeless. It's omniscient and timeless. So any timeless means that any idea of there being someone who's going somewhere within time and space is naturally non-occurring. We already are timeless. We only learn that we're constricted and constrained by time and space. But all the while, our awakened awareness is fundamentally, primordially, and totally free as that which is completely timeless and omniscient. And that timeless omniscience that is the true reality of what every human being is already accomplished, already present, does not need to be sought or attained. There's nothing that need be done. Entirely effortless in nature, completely effortless and already free, already real, already the totality of everything a human being is and nothing else. Only known through uncontrived natural rest. Once in a great while, this realization may occur in its completeness that is totally beyond causality. at the end of a very long practice. But you know, if that practice always led to enlightenment, it would always lead to enlightenment for everyone. So you know, when we really are interested in enlightenment, it's very important for us to adopt a practice that we know has worked for the most people. That's really important. It's just like if we wanted to buy a car, name a car that never worked and they stopped selling it. Hudson. Okay.
The Edsel,
that was made by Ford, and well, you know, it just didn't sell, it didn't work, nobody wanted it. So, now say you want to find the best car there is to drive, and you talk to people and they owned an Edsel, and they said, well, you know, this Edsel, it just didn't work at all, It didn't work. I had to take it back. And, you know, eventually Ford ended up not selling it anymore. Well, you wouldn't go out and buy an Edsel. You know, you wouldn't. Do you get the parallel here? You'd want to talk to people who own cars that really worked well, like Toyotas or Hondas. You'd talk to the many, many people who had purchased a car that worked, that lasted a long time, that didn't cost a lot of money to keep up, and that you could really rely on. So the same is true when it comes to what is more important than anything for every human being, and that is the great reality of what we are. You know, the great reality of what we are can't be confined into anything called spirituality, religion, philosophy, psychology, quantum physics, string theory, or anything else. You know, it can't be categorized. As I said earlier, if we looked really in a very discerning way, but using only elementary discernment, we could see that the greatest commonality of what enlightenment is being human. So why not look there? Why not look to what is common to each of us as human beings and indivisible? So that which is common to all of us as human beings, each of us as human beings, but is also indivisible, is all-inclusive awakened awareness with nothing left out. There isn't a single human being anywhere who can say, I am not aware, not one. And for every single one of those human beings, their indivisible awareness that completely unites all human beings and all beings all together is timelessly present, completely undivided, has never been split or fragmented in any kind of way. In it, no division or exclusion or differentiation has ever occurred. So when we just rest naturally, the obviousness of that natural presence of awareness comes more and more into being. And if you don't want to rest naturally, if that's too much of a practice for you, then don't. Just keep showing up here. And conviction will dawn. Or maybe you just showed up here for the first time today and conviction has already dawned. Or maybe you came in the door and conviction had already dawned before that. I don't know. But whatever it is, it is. It's already accomplished. It's already accomplished. You see, the moment we say that enlightenment is a destination and there's someone going there, then we have a teaching of non-duality. And there are many teachings we have a teaching of duality, rather. If a teaching is called a teaching of non-duality, but it posits that there is someone who needs to be fixed, in other words, it takes the position that there is a personal somebody who needs to be fixed, then it really is a teaching of duality. Now, teachings of duality can lead to the non-dual perspective. Even the great religions and traditions that are considered to be dualistic, their epitome teaching is always non-dual in perspective, whether it's the union with God of Christianity or whatever it is. So there's no getting out of it. That's what I'm trying to say. You can't get out of awakened awareness even if you try. There's no thought you can ever have, no bodily sensation you can ever have, no emotional state you can ever have that can make you into something other than awakened awareness. It's impossible. There's nothing that can be done, nothing that can be said, nothing that can be thought, nothing that can be felt, nothing that can be conducted or experienced. In other words, nothing one can do that separates one out from awakened awareness. If there were something someone could do that would separate them out from awakened awareness, then people who are on death row in prison for murder and mayhem would not be able to wake up. Do you see what I'm saying? If it was circumstance dependent and required only certain kinds of behaviors, then it would be impossible that this could ever occur. Well, maybe if I've never met you before, you're wondering, well, you know, how did she come up with all this? Where did all this come from? You know, I've heard this before, but maybe not exactly in this way. Well, the reason that I am so certain about this is that I didn't do anything to come to the realization of realizing who I have always been. I didn't do anything. I didn't even know enlightenment was possible. I had no idea. No idea whatsoever. Or awakening, or I had heard the term awakening, but I just thought it meant something like born again, being a born again Christian. And so I thought that was probably what awakening was. And so I lived a life in Western culture as an American girl and woman, and I went on with my life trying to be a successful American, you know, doing all the right things that I had been told would make me feel like an adult and make me feel successful when I grew up. And then I grew up, I got to be an adult, and I still didn't feel like an adult. And no matter how much doing I did, I didn't feel successful. And I went to great lengths with my doing. I really went to great lengths with my doing. You know, I was going for the gusto. I wanted it all. I wanted to achieve permanent satisfaction and fulfillment and happiness through doing and accomplishment. And so I did everything that it was suggested that I do by my family and culture. I went to school. I married a wonderful man and a successful man. I had a couple children, and I had a career too. It wasn't all that common. And, you know, when I was in my early 20s, and I got involved in the community and did all kinds of community volunteer work. I joined all kinds of clubs. I was even active on the international level in a number of ways. I was named one of the outstanding young women in America. So doing, 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 making myself into a good person. But no matter how much doing I did, I never reached this state I was going for. Permanent satisfaction, fulfillment, and happiness. It always eluded me. No matter how much doing I did, there was always more doing to be done. And this came, part of this that came along with me was my spiritual practice of Catholicism, because I had prayed from the beginning of my life. The first words that came out of my mouth were a prayer. That's true of everyone, by the way. No matter what the word is, it's a prayer. And so all of these things I felt had failed me completely in reaching my goal. I just hadn't reached my goal, but I didn't know what to do. I suddenly was faced with all these thoughts, feelings, emotional states, sensations, circumstances that were beyond any of my capacity to do anything about them. In other words, all of the things I'd cooked up that I thought would work to make me feel complete, to make me feel satisfied, fulfilled, done, an adult, where the doing would come to an end and there would just be this. It never happened. It just never happened at all. So in the maelstrom of all of this tsunami of points of view going on within me. I felt hopeless and powerless, but you know, I also felt angry. I thought, wow, you know, all this has failed me. I've worked so hard, and I've never felt like I've quite made it. In fact, the more I do, the more I see that there is to do. The more I try to be a good mother, the less I feel like a good mother, and the more books I'm trying to read to find out how to be a good mother. Or whatever it might be, wife, worker, whatever. And so there I was, and there I was with this great swirling, you know, like a 10,000-foot tsunami, something that can't be avoided, in other words. If you see a 10,000-foot tsunami coming, you won't be able to avoid it, by the way. There will be no way to avoid it. And this is the situation I was in. And so I knew not what to do, and I, as I felt hopeless, powerless, bewildered, desperate, and angry, suddenly it occurred to me that no matter what I was thinking, feeling, sensing, all the people, places, and things, all the circumstances, that every single one of them, whether they were gross and mundane, pedestrian, or exalted, sublime, divine, and joyous and wonderful, that no matter what the point of view happened to be, that they all had an underlying basis. That was the same underlying basis, that they all were the dynamic energy of something that I experienced only as complete relief. I didn't know what to call it. I'd never been to a meeting like this or met a guru or anything else. And so when all of this dynamic energy of point of view would appear, I'd just rest naturally. Without seeking anything. And that I didn't sit and do that. Whatever was going on in my life, as the dynamic energy appeared that I had believed in and taken to be myself, as all these points of view came up that I had taken to be myself, I rested naturally. Rested naturally, not separate from them, as them, but understanding for the first time that their origin, their only origin, in other words, no point of view has an independent origin of this complete relief, that their origin, essence, and nature is relief. Their essence is relief. Their nature is relief. Their origin is relief, no matter what the point of view. And as I would rest just as some points of view, then many points of view all of a sudden would resolve in this relief. And as the points of view resolved in this relief, I felt this incredible warmth of compassion arise in me. Just total and complete compassion, an actual felt sense of warmth arising that was complete in itself and that couldn't be turned off. So even if I wanted to turn it off, it would be impossible to turn it off. Compassion, bliss, love, all naturally occurring, wisdom, naturally occurring, already present is the reality of complete relief. And after just 10 days of that, all of a sudden, I realized that's who I'd always been. I'd always been complete relief. And there were many things I thought of, you know. The first thing I said was, wow. And I must have said that 1,000 times at first. Wow. 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 Here I've been working so hard. I've been working so hard to be somebody when all of us, all the while, this essence of being is already present. It's already present, and it always has been present. It was just as though I was looking this way, and suddenly I looked that way, and there was an entirely different vista. Entirely different vista, but it was so clear that it had already been present, and just huge laughter. And I could see that every point of view that I'd ever had was already complete relief, that it was already complete relief, that I'd never had to do anything about it, and that all the doing that I felt I needed to get done, to be somebody good, to be somebody who could be nice to other people, that all that doing had already been done. and that there was no doing to do and no doer to do it. You know, that then I saw that this personal identity I had taken myself to be an agent of everything, that all it was this aware basic space of total relief and nothing else. That's all it was. And that it wasn't some kind of container for all the points of view, but it was just another point of view equal to any other point of view, and that I very seldom had that point of view. I am somebody. Hey, I'm somebody. I'm really somebody. Very seldom does that point of view occur. So you see, when we have an assumption that there's somebody who's here all the time, a personal identity or agent who's always present, that's just a point of view too. So you see, no matter where you turn, there's only pure space and nothing else. That's the message here. And this is what I found in my own dilemma or deal of attempting to be a doer who was trying to get something done. And so, you know, when it comes down to this matter of a personal identity, I'm not positing, by the way, that we are non-existent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that we're neither existent nor non-existent. There's nothing that can be said about us. You know, what we can say conclusively is that we are aware, that awareness is naturally present as pure space, as aware basic space in which nothing need be done, and that aware basic space that is naturally present is entirely beneficial in nature. So, you know, if we want to examine our belief systems and assumptions, we need to rest as that which is capable of having a balanced view of all belief systems and assumptions. So I know that all of you here are engaged in many different things in your lives. So I'm not sitting here telling you that you have to change what is going on in your life, that you have to change the circumstances of your life. Natural rest is already accomplished. It's not circumstance dependent. Not circumstance dependent. So nothing needs to change. No one needs to change. Whatever points of view that there are within your vast basic space, they're the kiss of awareness and nothing else. That's all. That's all they are. So nothing needs to be changed. Nothing needs to be changed at all. Just rest naturally. If you're involved in a practice that you think has a lot of points of view that contradict what I'm saying, or where you feel like you need to do certain things in order to do that practice or have certain points of view in order to have that practice, just know that all those points of view would not be without awareness. They would not be without awareness. So whatever your point of view is, it would not be without awareness. This awareness, synonymous with so many things, we could call it God, we could call it Shiva, we could call it Kali, we could call it White Tara, Green Tara, we could call it Kuan Yin, we could call it Great Spirit, we could call it whatever we want to call it. But it's synonymous with awareness. When we're trying to talk to all human beings, we need a word that every human being can understand. Not only understand, but directly experience as the essence of their being, as the essence of every single point of view. So here we use awareness, but feel free to call it whatever you want to call it. I'm not saying you've got to call it awareness. This isn't that kind of place. This is just great freedom is a teaching that supports all of humankind at the grassroots level in knowing who we are in the most basic sense. And so the two approaches to that are to rest naturally without seeking anything. And if you don't want to do that, just show up and it'll dawn. People come here on a regular basis, and just sitting here, all of a sudden the light that was never off goes on. And it's just clear from then on. So it doesn't have to be any particular way because it's already accomplished. You already are who you are. You'll never hear anything else from me. Are there any questions or Would anyone like to come up and share about their life living as the infinite expanse of basic space?
I'll say something quickly.
I know what my first word was as well.
You know what your first word was?
My first word was bus.
Was bus?
Yeah.
All right. I haven't heard that before.
So that was my prayer, was it?
Bus, uh-huh.
Okay.
Pranam to the bus point of view.
My mother nearly, she couldn't believe it. I was only very, very young, and I kept saying bus every time a bus went past. So, there you go. Hi, sorry. My name's Adrian, and I've been coming here since January. And I just wanted to share something that happened yesterday, and I think the people who are doing the 12 inquiries, this will resonate with some of you perhaps. I was just very angry and frustrated with my fellow retreatees at the length of their answers, and I was very tired, I just didn't want to be there. And but all the while this was going on, this frustration and impatience, there was just complete calmness side by side with these feelings. And I was just resting as the essence of these sensations. And it's so different to how I would have been in December. I'd probably just walked out, I think. I'd made an excuse and walked out and then fumed all the way up the road. But so I was just amazed that I could be angry and calm at the same time. It was really amazing. So, yeah, that's what I really wanted to say.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you so much. Yes. Yes. Making decisions.
How what you are saying is combined is making people are supposed to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot get away from it in life.
Exactly.
So how it comes with your theory and it is the thing that you are saying.
Mm-hmm. You're asking how to make decisions when living as fully awakened awareness. Well, first of all, in a simple human way, we can see that a lot of decisions were made for me to be here today. So decisions aren't excluded. Decisions aren't excluded. But the way in which decisions come about are much different than when we're taking ourselves to be a bunch of points of view. When we take ourselves to be points of view, then usually before we make a decision, we know that we have to make a decision about something by a certain time. Do you have a decision you need to make?
The reason that I'm here in India is because all this need to make decisions jumped in me. So I really said that I have to come here for research. Something like a visit.
You need to come here for a visit?
I find myself in my life in a situation that I had to make decisions.
Oh, okay.
All this kind of need to make decisions jumped on me that I couldn't make any decision. I felt very confused. So I took this walk, this break, and came to India. I said, this is a good place to visit. So I can come back with a clear mind and maybe be able to make decisions to go on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I all the time, what I am hearing around, I try to find this how it relates to my life, to my own life. And that's why I was asking about making a decision.
Mm-hmm.
If you can still keep your peace of mind and your own and keep your rest naturally.
Rest naturally.
And still go on with your reality of life. You still have to keep on with the reality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And making decisions.
Of course. Natural rest is the reality of decision making. But if we only see points of view and that's all, then our frame of reference will be very limited and we won't have a balanced view. And also the decision making, it will be preceded by a lot of worry and obsessive thinking about the decision. Leading up to the decision will be made, and then after the decision will be made, there will be more thinking and worry about whether it was the right decision. Does any of this sound familiar? You know, this is common to all of us, so there's no one left out here. Well, when we rest naturally as the decision-making process with no elaboration. So there's none of this elaboration of spinning out all of the different possibilities, fearful consequences, worries and concerns related to the decision. What's primary is natural rest. And in the trust of that natural rest, we know that a decision will come and that it'll be the perfect decision. So see, your impulse to come here rather than act on everything that was occurring at home, your impulse to come here and just rest and come to a conclusion from that natural state of rest, that's absolutely perfect. That's absolutely perfect. And even if we're involved in many, many circumstances and it seems like we're overwhelmed with things in our lives, if we have a thought and an emotion and then another thought and an emotion followed by an impulse to act, you see, that's all within a very small context. All that happens within a very small context. We've just had a few thoughts and feelings and an impulse to act. It kind of looks like that. So we don't have a balanced view. The only view or vantage point we have, it all occurs within a few points of view. So we're looking at everything through just a few points of view. But when we rest naturally as those points of view, as well as all other points of view that ever occurred throughout the three times, past, present, and future, then all there is that natural reality of rest that's inseparable from all those points of view. But when we rest, we're all inclusive. We're all complete. We include all points of view. So when we include all points of view, then we have a balanced perspective. And the decision we make is made from ease. It's made from the ease of natural rest rather than from compulsive thinking about something. Does that answer your question?
I remember you saying that the awakening for you happened 25 years ago and that you've only been teaching for 3 years, but you knew you would teach at some stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question is, how was it that you knew 3 years ago that, oh, now it's time to start teaching? Like, how did that arise? Or what was,
Well, what I actually said and what occurred was that from the very beginning, when I woke up, there was someone else with me who also woke up. So from the very beginning, if you want to call it teaching, it was just this sharing of the mutual recognition of what we really are. So that occurred from the very beginning. Actually, what I said is that I publicly started teaching 3 years ago. So before that, the teaching had occurred in a very private way. Yeah. And as to the formalization of the Great Freedom Teaching in its three series of teachings, which are written teachings, what can you say about something that is totally beyond causality? You can't establish some kind of cause and effect relationship about how it comes to be. You see, I could go into cause and effect and try to explain it from cause and effect, but what's most important is that it's naturally present right here. You see, if I go into cause and effect, I could be talking for days about how all this came about, and you'd all be bored to death. So, what's more important is that we just come to a definitive conclusion right here about what we are, and that we know that all the points of view, no matter what they are, they're all included within awakened awareness. And when we just rest naturally, they settle down. They just settle down in and of themselves, just like when we stop stirring the pond with a stick, the sediment settles to the bottom, and then there's only the crystal clear pond. So all these points of view, no matter what they are, we've never needed to do anything about them. They're just the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. When we think we need to do something about them, then we're in the endless hamster wheel. We're on the endless hamster wheel of trying to do something about them. But all the points of view, they vanish in and of their own accord. They vanish naturally without a trace. They dissolve in and of themselves. They're their own undoing. They're fleeting. They're ephemeral. Any description is fleeting or ephemeral. It's always resolving in the basic space of what it is. It's always resolving and already resolved in the basic space of what it is, pure space and nothing else. So every point of view, no matter what it is pure space and nothing else. Even if we tried to clutch onto a point of view, grab a point of view and say, this is what I really am, we'd never be able to hold on to it. Has anyone ever been able to do that? Say, oh yes, this is what I really am. I know I'm this now. It's a fixed identity and it'll never change. It's never going to move. It's impossible. It's impossible because all the points of view, they're like the flight path of a bird in the sky. They vanish naturally, leaving no trace. Just like a boat comes along through the ocean, we couldn't really say where its wake started or where it'll end or where the middle of it was or anything else. We couldn't come to any conclusion about that. So all the points of view, like a knot in a snake, they're their own undoing. Like a contortionist undoes herself or himself, they're their own undoing. There's nothing that need be done about them. When we rest naturally, conclusively as the essence of our being, we come to a complete understanding of ourselves as we are. A complete understanding of ourselves as we are. But we don't need to leave anything out. We don't, the reality of what we are, all-inclusive life, all-inclusive awakened awareness, it is not life-denying. It's not life-denying. It's life-giving, life-affirming. All of it is life-giving, life-affirming. When we take ourselves to be someone who needs to be fixed, a lot of times we say, oh, there's this thing about myself that I have to control, or that thing about myself that I have to control in order to be a good person. And sometimes in the process we deny life. You know, we cut ourselves off from relationship. We avoid relationship as a way of thinking we're going to arrive at life. You know, we avoid relationship with our own sensations or thoughts or emotions by trying to quell them or quash them in some way. We avoid relationships with other people by taking other people to be a big bag of flesh that contains a lot of points of view. And then so what we think of ourselves, we automatically think of others. But when we rest naturally, we see that, wow, we really begin to understand this thing that's talked about all the time, oneness, indivisibility, that there really is no other. There is no other because there's never been someone for an other to be an other to. Do you see what I'm saying? But we can only know that through natural rest. Otherwise, all these will just be mental concepts. They'll just be a bunch of thoughts and philosophies we have about what's real, but we won't have the direct experience of it. So what the Great Freedom Teaching is about is the direct introduction to that experience in the beginning. So the direct introduction, this is who you are. Not the direct introduction in terms of a philosophical concept, but the direct experience of your own reality. the decisive experience of your own reality. Because see, only with that do you know what to rest as. So there are many people here who have that decisive experience. You know what that is. But there's nothing to search for. You already are who you are. And when you rest naturally as that, it just becomes more and more obvious, like the dimmer switch, turning up a dimmer switch. It just gets brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter. There's no destination or anyone going there. But yet in the simple human experience of our own reality, each moment is more glorious than the last. In this way, we support ourselves completely. You know, it's just the ultimate loving kindness for ourselves and everyone else. Because when we know ourselves so completely, so thoroughly, when we come to this conclusive, sublime knowing of our own nature as it is, then once we know that about ourselves, we know that it's true about everyone. And oh, we have immense compassion then, you know. This warmth of compassion arises. It's relentless. It can't be turned off. It just is as it is. We know ourselves as we are. We know definitively that everyone else is exactly that as well, that there's never been anyone who needed to be fixed. Even if we see lots of people who don't recognize who they are, we realize that they really recognize who they are. They're already timelessly free no matter what anyone takes herself or himself to be. Everyone's already timelessly free. Timeless means timeless. So you see, even if we have a thought, the underlying timelessness of that time-bound thought is timelessly free. So there's no way to get away from it. There's no escape hatch. There's no escape hatch. There's no exit door to awareness. There's nothing we can do, say, think, intuit, or anything else that can take us out of awareness. It's impossible. It's totally impossible. This is the non-dual perspective. Make no mistake about it. This is the non-dual perspective. It's not circumstance dependent. It doesn't matter where you are or who you are or what you're doing. You are who you are. So what this means, essentially, to talk about it in a very practical way, is that the awareness of the greatest being who ever lived and the awareness of the worst human being who ever lived, who caused the most murder and mayhem or whatever it may have been, their awareness is equal. You know, it's equal as aware basic space. Now, what they did with their awareness, that may be a different story. But the awareness just simply is. In one case, awareness was turned to seeing everything as it is. So self-knowing awareness. Each human being, all they are is self-knowing awareness. That's the true identity. That's the true identity. And that self-knowing awareness, its entire display throughout the magnificence of human life, that awareness as every single point of view is to either realize that that point of view is itself or to make it separate. So that's the only choice with every single point of view, no matter what it is. It's the sublime choice to realize it as it is, and in that realizing all points of view as they are, or to make a story out of it.
Did your vision change when you woke up? Because, for instance, this room, you can see it as curtains and walls and the people, but in essence, it's all pure space. Mm-hmm. So you can also look at it a very different way. Mm-hmm. Did that change, or?
Everything changed, but nothing changed. But what about you? When you rest naturally, tell me about you.
Well, I kind of have a point of view that something in my vision will change when I wake up. Something, you know, about, I don't know. That's why I ask. And that actually holds me back. I know that. That's a point of view.
Well, when that point of view comes up, just rest naturally as that point of view. Because, first of all, there's no destination. There's no destination to get to. How could you say that what is already accomplished is a destination? So again, that's placing yourself within a construct of a point of view of time. But you see, as natural rest, there's no construct of time. Or there can be, and it's fine. But you see, when you rest naturally, you know everything in its completeness. So you don't know just one aspect of it. One aspect of it. So through natural rest, you'll realize more and more that there is no destination.
Is it not natural rest when points of view keep stepping in?
Yes.
Since I was choosing to, this morning, making a choice, point of view came up, choosing to try to rest naturally in that point of view. And another point of view told me that I'm being a masochist to rest naturally and not to take action. And this inclination to want to respond to every point of view was accusing me to not respond. It's just masochism to rest. To rest would be masochistic somehow.
To rest and not do something that you needed to do, or what are you saying?
To rest and try to see and accept everything as just arising and subsiding. To try to just rest and welcoming everything when some other point of view comes and says there's abusiveness.
Oh, I see what you mean. In your life.
Perceiving.
Yeah, abusiveness. Resting naturally doesn't mean being a doormat. That's not what it means. Doesn't mean that at all. It just means that when we're all caught up, say, in an abusive situation, then there can be just so many points of view that it seems crushing. You know, plus we feel so diminished by the abuse. We just feel so diminished in our being. Because this isn't natural. It isn't a natural way for us to be or for us to be with anyone else. So it seems like, you know, a lot going on. And in those kinds of situations, it's better to just take some space and rest. You know, to rest until we can settle down ourselves and then come to a decision that's right for us, that will totally support the fullness of our being. But in the meantime, with all the points of view that come up, rest. Just rest. But not... rest isn't synonymous with acceptance. And rest isn't synonymous either with welcoming. Rest is just rest, with no elaboration. So it's resting as the essence of awareness with no elaboration. It's resting as the essence of a point of view, just as it is. So there's no action to accept or welcome or do, just rest. And in that, you will come to a conclusion about taking care of yourself. Yeah. And it will be one that is powerful and fully supportive of you and your being.
Of who? Of who? Like this, this is a way in which I've taken sort of the teachings I've had in Vaika and then abuse myself with it. Well, who's relief? You know, who needs to be supported? Who, you know, this, like, who am I? Just using it as like a whip, kind of.
Of course, Advaita Vedanta, first of all, I want to say, has many different voices. It has many different voices, but Shankaracharya, Adi Shankara, the founder of Advaita Vedanta, had a very complete offering. And today there are many voices of Advaita Vedanta that aren't that complete offering. Rather, they're the adoption of an extreme that really isn't the practice of Advaita Vedanta. So these suggestions of non-existence, for example, of a personal identity, that's the adoption of an extreme. To say, oh, constantly be saying, well, who is there who needs relief? Who is there who's being abused? That kind of thing. That's just all more point of view. It's just all more point of view. But you see, natural rest is totally uncontrived and indescribable. So we talk about it as aware basic space or awareness, but we don't take any position about non-existence or existence, not either one. We just say that we are natural rest. We are the natural rest of aware basic space, and how could we possibly describe or make into something what we are as human beings? How could we possibly describe that? It's just so glorious, so beyond imagination or expression, that if we try to make it into something, that then somehow we never quite get it. But what we can say about ourselves is that we are self-knowing awareness. And when we rest, it's just like turning on this lamp in the room at night when it's dark. When self-knowing awareness is like this lamp, and that when the lamp lights the room at night, illuminates the room at night, it also illuminates itself. You can't even see the lamp unless the light is on. So the same is true with our self-knowing awareness, but it's definitely not masochistic, and it's not this intellectual speculation that goes on and on about who is the doer, where is the I, what is the I, is there an I, who needs relief, who is there that's being abused. These are not direct expressions of the reality of what we are. These are extremes to be avoided. They're extremes to be avoided. So, you know, it's very important to know that the essence of our being is entirely beneficial in nature, entirely beneficial in nature. So its expression just for each one of us as whoever we are is complete loving kindness, complete loving kindness in every practical way of ourselves, our own human form, as self-knowing awareness in human form. What a wondrous, wondrous possibility. What a tremendously wondrous possibility. Complete loving kindness, just totally filled at all times with the warmth of compassion for ourselves and everything and all, everyone and all, with total love and bliss and wisdom for ourselves as a simple human being and everything and all and everyone and all. So, and this can be felt, you know, we know when we're really taking care of ourselves. We know that. We know that. It's not a way of being with ourselves where we're torturing ourselves additionally, you know, like saying, well, I really need to be, I've learned that there's someone here who really needs to be fixed, and now I've learned that there is no I, there is no doer. So now I'm going to apply that antidote or point of view of there is no doer to the point of view that there is a doer. You see, we still just have two points of view. But in natural rest, all of this comes to its definitive conclusion. But it has to be natural rest without elaboration. So natural, not natural rest, and then am I resting naturally? Is this natural rest? Do I really know what I'm doing or whatever it is? But, you know, just natural rest is each one of those points of view.
But isn't all the positivity a point of view? Isn't all the positivity you're describing about this a point of view?
That is the natural rest that is the essence of every point of view. Every point of view, no matter what it is empty, pure, and wholly positive. Those are the three things we could say about it. It's empty in that it only is aware basic space. It's pure in that its essence is original purity. It's never been anything other than this original purity, this primordial purity of aware basic space. And it's wholly positive in that every point of view, no matter what it is, it only is basic space and nothing else. So its entire intent is wholly positive. But we can only know that through natural rest. We can't think our way into it. Initially, thinking may introduce us to it, but it's only through natural rest that we come to the direct experience and definitive conclusion for ourselves. But we have to stop intellectually speculating about it and just rest. Just allow that felt sense of ease to come to yourself. And this is going to be much more evident to you over the next days, believe me. Naturally so. Because see, what we are is naturally present. It's naturally occurring. And just placing yourself in the circumstance of natural ease is really that all that there is to do. It just becomes more and more evident. The conviction dawns that we are who we are. It's very, very sad, and it's very unfortunate as well that there are a number of teachings today that posit an idea about awakening, what awakening is, that are really more harmful than they are beneficial. They're really more harmful than they are beneficial. So this is, you know, very sad. It's very unfortunate. But we know, you know, we know. We know. We always know. And the way that we know is that we are completely at ease. And not completely at ease in a self-centered way, but completely at ease in an all-inclusive way. So, yeah. Glenn.
Candace, do you have any advice about how to be at rest during one of the more powerful points of view, such as fear, particularly fear?
Fear about what?
Could be anything, but...
Well, what is it, though, Glenn? We like to hear all the juicy details.
Well, it came to mind because I wanted to share something with today's satsang, and I was sort of waiting for the opportunity, but I feel my heart beating more rapidly, you know, and it's like the anticipation of speaking in front of a large group of people makes my heart beat, and the adrenaline comes in a little bit, and I start to feel a little bit trembly in the body and a bit lightheaded, and basically it's fear. And I don't understand it, because for 7 years I every week I stood in front of 800 people as a teacher. So, and yet I still have what I had as a child when I would put my hand up to ask questions of the teacher. So that's just one situation. Another situation might be fear of death. Another situation might be I'm in the street and someone's being violent and there's a little bit of fear that they might attack me or something. But the main one is this. It's this speaking in front of people. And as you were speaking the last 20, 30 minutes, I've been trying to rest in it. It's come and it's gone and it's come and it's gone. And I don't understand why. It feels totally not me. It's like it's happening of its own accord.
Ah,
yeah.
Very good. You got to the root of the matter there. Because you see, it is the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. So it's unpredictable, ceaseless, and countless. It is. It's just like, have you ever tried to get rid of a point of view? Well, even if we try to get rid of a point of view, we probably find it popping up again, no matter what it might be. So the most important thing to do is just rest and not make anything out of it. And, you know, when it comes to the fear that you're experiencing right now, right here, just what the practice that you're engaging, just the practice of natural rest, not in the fear, but as the fear. See, you're inseparable from the fear. Awareness is inseparable from the fear, like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. So this dynamic energy of awareness, it just is as it is. But there's no way to truly understand that dynamic energy of awareness as it is unless you're completely at rest, just like Adrian described here. It, from dualistic perception, from cause and effect, it seems impossible that there could be awareness naturally at ease that's present and inseparable from anger or annoyance or something like that. But yet, you know, no going out from that. In other words, no elaboration of the annoyance or anger in terms of an action that follows on it or another thought that follows on it. Just awareness as the dynamic energy of whatever it is.
And doing that, would that diminish the physiological symptoms, such as the heart beating more rapidly, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'd still feel the fear, but it wouldn't be quite so manifest in the body.
Or you wouldn't feel it at all. You know, it'd be just because it would, well. Look at it this way. Natural rest is really the ultimate yoga. Because everything that one tries to bring to peace in any kind of yogic practice is addressed as each point of view, no matter what it is. So if it's something like fear, if we're trying to deal with our fear as a point of view, but we cut ourselves completely off from the world in order to do that, then there are a lot of fears we'll never have to face. So if we come to terms with our fear in a certain secluded setting, and then all of a sudden we're in an entirely different setting, something happens that's completely unexpected, and we're faced with all kinds of new perceptions, then we may not have freedom. But you see, the guarantee of the freedom in immediate perception that is the basis of the Great Freedom Teaching is so compassionate because it guarantees that we're free as all perceptions. So no matter what perception comes up, including the perception of our own death, we are free as that perception. We're completely free as that perception. So these things, they just come naturally to rest. There are many people who are afraid of getting up in front of groups of people. At one time, I was terrified of getting up in front of groups of people. When I was a young woman, my two children were in a daycare center. They were born when I was in my very early 20s. And so they elected me president of the board of this daycare center, and I had to get up there and give a speech. Well, you would have thought the world was coming to an end, the way I felt. You know, I had to get up there and give a speech. I didn't know if I could possibly do it. It just wasn't my thing. And none of you may believe this, but I'm very quiet. I'm a very quiet person. Now, that's hilarious, isn't it? What is she doing up there talking, this person who's afraid to speak in front of people? And she likes to be quiet. Well, you see, when we rest naturally, then all of a sudden it isn't this self-centered fear that's doing all the thinking and speaking and acting. It's just all-out compassion, the all-out reality of awareness that's doing all the thinking and speaking and acting. And that all-inclusive awareness, it includes fear, but it isn't fear. You see, so this is how through the ultimate yoga of natural rest you come to a definitive experience, a decisive experience of that. So now what was it you wanted to tell us, now that you confessed the beauty of your fear?
Said you've never heard of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Uh-huh.
Because I bet if I ask the English people here, what is the answer to the question of life, the universe, and everything? What answer would you give me?
42.
And I think you're going to get this, you send your teachings to England, your people come up to you and ask you because of the similarity between the fiction in this book and what happened in your own life.
Oh, is that right? Oh.
In Denny's.
You know, one of the great things about points of view is we're always trying to find another one to compare them to. So let me hear it.
It's 9 short paragraphs. It's the opening of the book.
Come up here, Gwen. Public speaking, by the way, is the great forgetter of point of view. There's no way to have a point of view when you're publicly speaking.
Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 92 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea. This planet has, or rather had, a problem, which was this. Most of the people on it were unhappy for pretty much of the time. Many solutions were suggested for this problem, but most of these were largely concerned with movements of small green pieces of paper, which is odd, because on the whole, it wasn't the small green pieces of paper that were unhappy. And so the problem remained. Lots of the people were mean, and most of them were miserable, even the ones with digital watches. Many were increasingly of the opinion that they'd all made a big mistake in coming down from the trees in the first place. And some said that even the trees had been a bad move, and that no one should have ever left the oceans. And then, one Thursday, nearly 2,000 years after one man had been nailed to a tree for saying how great it would be to be nice to people for a change, one girl sitting on her own in a small cafe in Rickmansworth suddenly realized what it was that had been going wrong all this time, and she finally knew how the world could be made a good and happy place. This time it was right, it would work, and no one would have to get nailed to anything. Sadly, however, before she could get to a telephone to tell anyone about it, a terribly stupid catastrophe occurred and the idea was lost forever. This is not her story, but it is the story of that terrible, stupid catastrophe and some of its consequences.
Oh. All right. What to say? Well, what to say is that, have you heard me use this term enlightened intent? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Well, enlightened intent is that every single point of view, no matter what it is an enlightened intent. Its intent is enlightenment. So that when a person becomes fully alive with the full evidence of all-inclusive awakened awareness, all they are is enlightened intent. Because see, all the points of view are realized to be enlightened intent. So then there's this force that is like a huge cosmic blast that cannot be stopped. And that's what enlightened intent is. See, enlightened intent cannot be trapped, imprisoned, confined, constricted by any form whatsoever, not a book, not a practice, not anything at all. And it most especially cannot be contained or caught up in any kind of concept. It's absolutely impossible that that be so. And whereas all these other things that occur within cause and effect, as described so beautifully in what you read, they have sad consequences, dismal consequences, consequences that never reach a final conclusion. Enlightened intent is always the final conclusion about everything. And so, you know, it is a great force to be reckoned with because it's beyond causality. It includes causality, but it's beyond causality. Well, you see, we, as long as we're trapped within causality and take ourselves to be someone who is trapped within causality, we can never experience what it is to be beyond causality. We can never really experience the full force of enlightened intent. Enlightened intent is unrelenting. It's unrelenting as the dynamic energy of point of view. Each point of view, no matter what it is enlightened intent and nothing else. But if we take it to be something, then it's what's described in your book. You know, it's sad. It's like a good idea that went down the drain. But we can't be taken out of what we are, you know. So that's the reality. Nothing, no point of view whatsoever can take us out of what we are. A book with a sad ending or, you know, whatever it is. A life with a sad ending. None of it can take us out of what we are. And we either realize that when we die, or we get to realize it when we're running around, hitchhiking around the galaxy. We can either be hitchhiking from point of view to point of view, or we can be relaxed, totally relaxed, and just watching it all happen as the dynamic energy of ourselves. So what's to choose there? But then again, you know, this is the simple reality of our lives as human beings. It's a very simple reality. Wouldn't it make sense that what is most fundamental about us would be directly accessible, easy to get at, easily understood, easily known, easily experienced, easily realized to be ourselves? We'll sit quietly for a moment before we end.